Disclaimer: this episode of Dead Souls may contain graphic descriptions or audio recordings of disturbing events which may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
The general consensus amongst the scientific community is that there is no significant or credible evidence supporting the existence of ghosts or the afterlife. Neither is there any real evidence to support the existence of ESP, telekinesis, psychic abilities, or precognition. Many view such beliefs as a form of pseudoscience. However, over the years, we have uncovered a wealth of circumstantial evidence suggesting otherwise. Enough data for almost half of us to believe that there is something else there. There is more than what science has yet explained and proven. That being said, there are some people out there who want the fantastic to be proven so much, or for the supernatural to be real so bad, that they will bend, fabricate, and will the facts and evidence into being. They will interpret and wish results of phenomena into existence. Ultimately, this is poor science. This only sets the paranormal sciences back a step rather than progresses it. And whilst those folks may mean well or approach their beliefs with innocence, it can still be significantly damaging. Carl Sagan once said, quote, "Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence." Well, actually, the British philosopher David Hume first coined the phrase in 1748, but Sagan popularized it. Irrespective, both men were correct. "I want to believe" is simply not enough. Eyewitness reports and human experience may as well be no evidence at all. That being said, that doesn't stop many people from gaining a certainty over something based purely on anecdotal evidence. As the 19th century English writer G.K. Chesterton once wrote, "Do not be so open-minded that your brains fall out." But sometimes belief and a willingness to believe can be led by emotion, which is far stronger than any scientific evidence can convince you of. The loss of a loved one can make you believe in the afterlife far more than data to support a near-death experience. It's this emotional evidence that can allow frauds and charlatans to cash in and exploit those who want to believe. On Dead Souls, we talk about conspiracy theories, fringe science, paranormal phenomenon, and true crime. And of all of these things, I think tonight's episode would fall more into the latter category, true crime, because the subject of tonight's episode is a fraud, pure and simple. Yes, we like to celebrate science and evidence, sing the praises of newly proven strides in scientific discovery. But on the rare occasion, we'd also like to call out the charlatans, the fakes and frauds who take advantage of those at their most vulnerable, preying on their emotions for nothing more than financial gain. And boy, is there no bigger fraud than Sylvia Brown. I'm not slandering her. She's long dead. But given how the younger generation seem to be discovering her on social media, and her videos and books seem to be making a re-emergence, I figure now is the perfect time to call out her lies and bullshit. You may remember Sylvia Brown. She was the psychic golden child of 1990s talk shows. Shows like Montel Williams, Larry King Live, and Jenny Jones. Long before celebrity psychics like Tyler Henry, Matt Fraser, and Tony Stockwell took the spiritualist world by storm and crossed over into the mainstream, there was this queen of quackery. Sylvia Celeste Shoemaker discovered that she had psychic abilities in 1941 when she was just 5 years old, apparently. She claims in a 1998 autobiography titled, quote, "Adventures of a Psychic," how she recalls one night lying in bed at her childhood home in Kansas City, Missouri, and receiving a premonition about the impending deaths of both of her great-grandmothers, a premonition that proved to be true less than 2 weeks later. Young Sylvia was understandably upset and confused by her visions. So she confided in her grandmother, Ada Coyle, about how she had predicted the future. Sylvia's grandmother just so happened to be a professional psychic counsellor, and she said that she'd been waiting for that day to arrive. She sat Sylvia down and assured her that there was no reason to be afraid. Ada explained to little Sylvia that the psychic powers she had just discovered were in fact genetic. Hereditary, if you will. Sylvia was just the latest member of the family with a psychic gift from God. Ada confessed to Sylvia that she too had the gift, and that it could be traced all the way back to her great-great-great-grandmother, who was born in the year 1710. 2 years later, when Sylvia was 7 years old, she claims that she felt a presence as if somebody was standing directly behind her while she was combing her hair in the bathroom mirror. There was nothing out of the ordinary in the reflection, but Sylvia took a peek over her shoulder anyway, just in case. But there was nothing there. Sylvia resumed combing her hair when she felt the presence once again. But this time, it spoke directly to her. The voice told Sylvia that it had been sent from God and it was there to guide and protect her. After another consultation with Grandma Ada, it was concluded that the voice Sylvia was hearing was her spiritual guide. Her guide came down to her at the age of 8 in a beam of light and shared with Sylvia wisdom and life guidance. Sylvia's spirit guide, she said, lived on Earth as an Aztec Incan who at the age of 19 was killed by a spear in the year 1520 while protecting her infant daughter during the Spanish invasion of Colombia. The guide told her that her name was Elena, but Sylvia called her Francine. Ever since that day, Sylvia claimed that Francine was by her side, offering advice and giving warnings and a connection to what Sylvia calls, quote, the other side. Through Francine, Sylvia could interact with heaven and the angels. She could perceive all sorts of vibrational frequencies that a normal human being could not even comprehend. Sylvia could even speak directly to the dead themselves. However, throughout her childhood and teenage years, Sylvia found little use for her psychic powers and imaginary friends. Well, most of them anyway. Sylvia also said in her autobiography, and to be clear, this is where we sourced most of Sylvia's early life facts from, that she hated her mother, whom she considered as the devil incarnate. She was abusive and cold towards her, though she had a very close relationship with her father, who she called a lovable scumbag, who cheated on her mother regularly. Sylvia also had her own unique set of spiritual beliefs and habits. As well as smoking up to 70 cigarettes a day from the age of 12, she also believed that when we are born, we come from the other side, and we plan out our new incarnation before we come into the world. She believed that our spiritual souls plot out every step of our future lives to help guarantee that we accomplish the goals that we set for ourselves. We chose our families, we choose our enemies, we choose our careers, and we choose our partners. Everything, up front and in advance. Sort of negating any free will when you are alive, if you will. Sylvia attended St. Teresa's College in Kansas City, where she studied education and theology. After college, Sylvia spent the next 18 years indoctrinating children as a Catholic school teacher. At least according to Sylvia. I say this because 30 years after her divorce from her first husband, the husband publicly stated that Sylvia was never a teacher and that she had lied about it as well as lying about finishing college. There are no records or evidence of Sylvia working as a teacher, so her husband is probably right. It wasn't until a dinner party in the early 1970s, hosted by Sylvia and her first husband, Gary Dufresne, that she even considered turning her gifts and passions into a career. Sylvia was married 5 times during her lifetime. So on the basis of a hobby or a bit of fun, Sylvia started giving tarot card readings to a handful of people inside of her home. A handful of people told another handful of people. And before long, Sylvia Dufresne was holding gatherings of up to 300 people at local churches and town halls in the California town where the couple had relocated. The Dufresnes divorced in 1972, but not before Sylvia gave birth to two sons, Christopher and Paul, and of course, a new career. The following year, she married a man named Kinzel Brown and adopted his surname. With the help of her new husband, Sylvia Brown would continue her pursuit of transforming the supernatural into dollars and book sales, ultimately resulting in the incorporation of a professional, legally sanctioned non-profit organization called, quote, the Nirvana Foundation for Psychic Research. In 1974, Sylvia Brown claimed that through this organization and a Gnostic church she later founded called the Society of the Nova Spiritus, she would be able to help people. I'm sure Sylvia thought the Society of the Nova Spiritus sounded cool, but it translates from Latin to English as the Society of the New Breath, which sounds like some kind of New Age toothpaste or something. Anyway, Sylvia would help thousands of people with their spiritual and religious quest. She claimed to help people, quote, gain control of their lives, live more happily, understand the meaning of life, and to find God in their own unique way. Sylvia also began work as a pro bono psychic advisor to law enforcement and psychiatric professionals. Another one of the ways that Sylvia tries to help was by offering investment tips to those seeking spiritual direction with their finances. Thus, in 1988, Sylvia Brown convinced Greg and Robin Cross to invest $20,000 into a gold mining venture that her husband was managing. Sylvia and Kenzel explained to the couple that the mine was on the verge of operation and that their $20,000 investment would allow them to get started right away. In order to close the deal, Sylvia shared with the Crosses that she had, quote, strong psychic feelings that the mine would be extremely lucrative for everyone involved. A little over 1 month later, the mining venture declared bankruptcy. Greg and Robin Cross had lost 20 grand, but they weren't going to take it lying down. After multiple attempts at recovering their money from the Browns, the Crosses filed a complaint with the United States Department of Corporations on May 26, 1992. Both Sylvia and Kinzel Brown were indicted on criminal charges of investment fraud and grand theft. The investigation uncovered that the Browns had sold the securities in the gold mine without a permit, and that instead of going towards operating costs, the money invested by the Crosses had actually been immediately transferred to a bank account controlled by Sylvia's Nirvana Foundation for Psychic Research. Sylvia and Kinzel Brown pleaded no contest to the investment fraud charges, and the couple were forced to pay restitution and given 1 year probation on top of a 4 month jail sentence for Kinzel and 200 hours of community service for Sylvia. The couple divorced soon after. I guess true love does fade away. But now Sylvia was officially a convicted fraudster. She would later comment on the fraud case in her autobiography, stating how she blamed the bankruptcy entirely on Kinzel, writing that her ex-husband had attempted to cover up the illegal activities in which he was involved and which she had been completely unaware of at the time. Even though the psychic predictions that convinced the Crosses to invest their $20,000 were entirely Sylvia, given how she was the, you know, psychic one. Sylvia wrote in her book, quote, I wasn't able to see any of it coming because, well, I am not psychic about myself. But Sylvia Brown, who kept the last name after her divorce but added an E to the end of it, claimed to be psychic about practically everything else. Brown began making the rounds on daytime talk shows and made quite the name for herself. People were taking her seriously. In fact, people were taking her so seriously that the FBI even interviewed her after the 1993 World Trade Center bombing to see if she could provide any insight into potential suspects.
Short build, wiry, black hair, black eyebrows. There's an M on there, and I'm not exactly, but it's S-A-L, Z-E-M something. Salzman. Salzman.
The gentleman that you were describing is obviously this gentleman. See, he looks exactly as you saw in your vision.
Mohamed Salami was the first suspected bomber arrested on March 4th, 1993. Salami, Salzman. Impressive, right? Sylvia's prediction was pretty damn close. And indeed, many people thought so. No one bothered, it seems, to look a little closer, however. The FBI interview with Sylvia was conducted on March 16th, 1993, almost 2 weeks after Salami was actually arrested. Okay, so Sylvia might have been a little disingenuous after all. In retrospect, it's obvious that Brown had seen the media reports of the arrest, but her prediction, or lack thereof, was mostly harmless in the grand scheme of things, I guess. I suppose there's no reason to dwell on this so-called prediction when there are far, far worse yet to come.
About a year ago, during the first conversation that I had with Sylvia, I had said to her, Sylvia, please help me. I'd lost $1,000 in my home. Where did I hide this $1,000? She had said to me, it's in a red book. I had to pick up some clothing to my left. A red book fell to the floor. It was my journal. At that moment, I truly knew that Sylvia was truly psychic.
Sylvia Brown's popularity exploded in the mid-1990s thanks to a few New York Times best-selling books, infomercials, appearances on radio shows like Larry King Live, and appearances on television shows like Montel Williams. Sylvia would go on these shows and perform psychic readings for members of the audience. She would make predictions about the economy, the love lives of celebrities, and the end of days. She would even offer health advice to people, some of whom were chronically ill. But what Sylvia Brown became best known for was her self-proclaimed ability to break open unsolved cases, especially those involving missing persons.
Do you ever work with, like, police?
Oh, yeah, I have 250 cases, in fact, right on my, there's a lot of cases I've solved right on Montel's show. I also cracked the ski mask rapist case.
Many of the cases Sylvia's claimed to have solved, like the ski mask rapist case, are unverifiable. Either the information she provided was too vague to give her sole credit, or there are no records available to corroborate her story. However, there are many examples of cases where Sylvia Brown did far more harm than good. In 1999, a six-year-old girl named Opal Jo Jennings was kidnapped from her grandparents' house near Fort Worth in Texas while playing with a cousin in the front garden. The cousin told police that a man pulled up to the curb in front of the house, grabbed Opal, and threw her into the passenger seat of his truck. She said the man hit Opal when she fought back, and she could hear Opal screaming as the truck pulled away. Opal Jo Jennings was never seen again, and the investigation was going nowhere. Without anywhere else to turn, Opal's grandmother appeared on the Montel Williams show and pleaded for help from Sylvia, the world-renowned psychic. Quote,
"This is too much for my family and me to handle. We want her back. I need to know where Opal is. I can't stand this. I need your help, Sylvia. Where is Opal? Where is she?"
And this was Sylvia's reply.
"She's not dead, but what bothers me, now I've never heard of this before, but for some reason she was taken and put into some kind of slavery thing and taken into Japan."
According to Sylvia, Opal was alive, but she was suffering a fate worse than death. Sylvia said that Opal had been put on a boat and forced into sex slavery in Japan, where she was being brutally and repeatedly raped. Opal's grandmother felt completely helpless. You could hear in that clip the audience groaning. But later that year, a registered child molester in Fort Worth named Richard Lee Franks was arrested for the kidnapping and the murder of Opal Jo Jennings. He had killed Opal with blunt force trauma to the head within hours of her abduction. detectives found Opal's skeletal remains 13 miles away from her grandparents' house. She was still wearing her pink Barbie tennis shoes. Sylvia Brown never acknowledged how wrong she was about the Opal Jo Jennings case. She never acknowledged the psychological and emotional torture she inflicted on Opal's grandparents. Instead, Sylvia returned to the Montel Williams show, where she continued to make inaccurate and irresponsible predictions.
Because he was picked up in a blue-colored sedan by a guy by the name of Michael.
Was he abducted when you say picked up?
Yeah, abducted, yeah.
He was grabbed.
Grabbed.
Is yeah. there any better description of the vehicle other than just a blue sedan?
The vehicle is a blue sedan, and I think it's a Chevrolet.
Is there any kind of a description of the person driving the car?
Yeah, the guy was dark-skinned, although he wasn't black. He was more Hispanic-looking. Had real long, dark hair. And, strange enough, Hispanic, but he had dreadlocks.
On October the 6th, 2002, at 1:30 in the afternoon, 11-year-old Sean Hornbeck disappeared while riding his bike to a friend's house in Richwoods, Missouri. After 4 months of unsuccessful search parties, the investigation had reached a dead end. Sean's mother, Pam, and his stepfather, Craig Ackers, reached out to Montel Williams and Sylvia Brown for help. Sylvia informed Sean's parents that he was abducted by a tall Hispanic man with dreadlocks. When Pam Ackers asked if her son was still alive, Sylvia shook her head and said no. Sylvia said Sean's body could be found between two large boulders in a wooded area about 20 miles away, southwest from their home. About a month after their appearance on the Montel Williams show, the Ackers received a call at their home in Missouri. It was Sylvia Brown. She told Sean's parents that she had new information to share, and that they could continue their conversation about their son's disappearance for a one-time fee of $700. Pam was desperate and willing to do anything to find her son, but she didn't even have $700 in her bank account. Sylvia held firm on her price and hung up the phone without offering any further assistance to the devastated family. Although, the family, it seems, wouldn't need it.
The search for a kidnapped 13-year-old boy in Missouri has led police to a shocking discovery. Not only did they find Ben Onvey, who was snatched from his neighborhood on Monday, they've also recovered a boy who was kidnapped from another Missouri neighborhood 4 years ago. Sean Hornbeck disappeared in October 2002 when he was 11. He went for a bike ride and wasn't heard from again until now, when he was found in the same home where Ben was being held.
On January 16th, 2007, while serving an unrelated arrest warrant at an apartment complex in Kirkwood, Missouri, police spotted a white truck in the parking lot. The truck matched the description that witnesses had given of a vehicle used in the kidnapping of a 13-year-old boy earlier that week. Police found 13-year-old Ben Onvey in the apartment, who had recently been abducted, but also 15-year-old Sean Hornbeck. Hornbeck had, by that point, been missing for over 4 years. The kidnapper was a man by the name of Michael J. Devlin. He was not a tall Hispanic man with dreadlocks, as Sylvia Browner described. He was a short, stocky white guy with thinning hair. He was a manager of a pizza shop from St. Louis in Missouri. Sylvia Brown had been completely wrong on every single detail of her predictions. Again, even more concerning was that the local police had actually rerouted their search based on the information that Sylvia had provided. This wasted valuable time and resources in the investigation, potentially even prolonging the sexual abuse that Sean Hornbeck suffered while in captivity for those 4 years. Sylvia Brown was widely criticized for her participation in the Hornbeck case. She publicly denied offering information to Sean's parents in exchange for a fee. She claimed that she worked strictly with law enforcement agencies on missing persons cases, and that she would never contact the families directly. It must have been an imposter who called the family, she said. Sylvia's business manager, Linda Rossi, further defended her boss's shitty predictions in a statement that read, quote,
Sylvia stated on her appearances on the Montel Williams Show, in her books and in each of her lectures, she cannot possibly be 100% correct in each and every one of her predictions. She has, during a career of over 50 years, helped literally tens of thousands of people. It is so sad that many in the public will afford any other professional, such as doctors, lawyers, and even law enforcement, the right to be human and to be wrong, but not Sylvia.
These numbers, of course, were grossly exaggerated. She also never gave lectures at any educational establishments. But that's right, the woman who paraded herself around on multiple television shows and in the press claiming to have the supernatural ability to talk to the dead and to predict the future was complaining about not getting leeway or sympathy for human error from a public that she had continuously misled. Sylvia Brown was a fraud, and almost everybody knew it. Even Montel Williams, the guy who provided Sylvia a regular platform to peddle her crap.
You believe in that stuff, Montel? Be honest.
Come on, I've said it clearly on my show a million times. I don't believe in psychics. You know, I happen to believe that for whatever reason, this woman has a little bit more intuition than most people I know. But the thing that's funny about it, she's great. She's a funny character.
Right.
She's funny. She's hysterical. You look at her. You listen to her. She gives some of the funniest answers. People love her and hate her. But you have a right to do either one.
What Montel was saying here is that Sylvia Brown was a ratings darling, an entertainment gift to his TV show. He had no problem turning a blind eye to blatant quackery if it equated to an extra zero on the end of his earnings and ratings. When asked about the inaccurate predictions made on his television show by Sylvia Brown, Montel would always respond with, quote, no comment. Funnily enough, this was the answer that Sylvia Brown should have used herself when approached by grieving parents about their missing children. But she didn't. After all, where was the money and fame in honesty? Instead, Sylvia would offer half-hearted shots in the dark and then write a book about it, patting herself on the back for helping so many families in need. Sylvia would shrug off any criticism like water off a duck's back. Montel Williams would invite her back on his show time and time again, allowing Sylvia a platform to throw more shit at the wall and see what stuck. And sometimes you could smell it as soon as she dealt it. Like this time, where a woman asked her what happened to her deceased boyfriend.
I lost my boyfriend tragically a few years ago. They never found him. And I've had such a hard time since. Every day.
The reason why you didn't find him is because he's in water. And find him in water, it's like the girl that's missing in Aruba. You can't find somebody.
Well, it was September 11th. There was no... He was a fireman, but...
Nice one, Sylvia. But then there's this prediction.
My daughter, Michelle, was 17 years old. She'll be gone 5 years, the 21st of this year. Sylvia, I don't know how she died. Please, if you can, how did she die?
She was shot.
Circumstances around her death?
She just collapsed in her room.
Oh dear, Sylvia. Michelle had actually randomly just collapsed in her bedroom. An autopsy would reveal that there had been no foul play involved in her death. There was no possible way that she died from a gunshot. When presented with these facts, Sylvia stuck to her guns and responded curtly with, quote, I don't care. In another heartbreaking example of Sylvia Brown's complete ineptitude, Gwen Cruson appeared on the Montel Williams Show looking for answers 7 years after her daughter Holly went missing from San Diego in California in March of 1995. Sylvia told Gwen that Holly had run away to Hollywood, where she was now addicted to drugs and working as a stripper. After the show, Gwen Cruson immediately flew to Los Angeles. She scoured every strip club in Hollywood, handing out flyers and interviewing club owners. But there was no trace of Holly. Gwen Cruson died from an aneurysm less than a year later. She died worried sick, convinced by a TV psychic that her daughter was a junkie strung out on the streets of LA. Holly Cruson's body was eventually identified in 2006. Her body had been sitting in the medical examiner's office for over 10 years, having been found in Descanso, California, around 40 miles from her home. She had been murdered and was eventually identified through dental records. Sylvia's list of greatest misses is seemingly endless. They would be hilarious if they weren't so tragic. She told the parents of Ryan Ketcher, who disappeared in November 2005, that his body had been stuffed into a metal shaft by two panicked friends after he, quote, aspirated on alcohol. Ryan's body was later found at the bottom of a pond inside of his truck at Kickapoo State Park in Danville, Illinois. The coroner couldn't ascertain if his death was a suicide or if his truck had accidentally veered off the road. The coroner was certain, however, that there was no foul play or criminal activity involved in his death. Sylvia told the family of Linda McClelland that she had been kidnapped by a man with the initials MJ, that she was still alive and well and now living in Orlando. One of the McClelland family members was present for Sylvia's reading, Linda's son-in-law, David Rapaski. He was later convicted of murdering Linda. Her remains were found near her home in Wilkins, Pennsylvania. I wish I could find the clip of her telling him this prediction so I could show you his reaction to Sylvia as he sat there knowing full well he had killed Linda but pretending that he believed Sylvia's bullshit. Sylvia Brown also missed the mark with Terry Webb, Wayman Robbins, Laurie Pleasance, Richard Torres, John Slayton, Richard Kneebone, Robert Hayes, Erica Frazier, and the list goes on and on and on. And these are just the televised predictions that she got wrong. There was also that time that Sylvia Brown appeared on Coast to Coast AM on January the 3rd, 2006. God, I love Art Bell. She appeared on the radio show the day after the Sago mine disaster in West Virginia in January 2006. A coal mine had exploded and collapsed, trapping 13 miners underground. Many of the details about the situation were still unknown at the time of Sylvia's live on-air appearance. And there was breaking news in the middle of her interview. A report emerged that the trapped miners had been found. The miners were all alive and well, the report said. Of course, Sylvia commented that she knew that was going to happen because she's a psychic, remember?
No, I knew they were going to be found. I hate people that say something after the fact.
Minutes later, that original report was recanted. There had been a miscommunication between the rescue crews and the command center. The revised report announced that at least 12 of the 13 coal miners were dead. Then Sylvia said this.
I don't really think there's anybody alive. If there is, I think maybe only one. I just don't believe that there's... I haven't heard anything because I've been with you, but I just don't think they are alive.
I almost turned inside out while cringing the first time I heard this. Sylvia Brown had completely flip-flopped on a prediction that she made less than an hour earlier. Anyway, as bad as it was, Sylvia's Sago mine disaster comments hardly made a blip on the public's consciousness. Although there was another case that did. It's perhaps Sylvia's most well-known botched prediction. It lies in with another episode I produced recently, episode 162 about the kidnappings by Ariel Castro. A young woman named Amanda Berry had disappeared in 2003, just the day before her 17th birthday.
Don't think I'll ever see her again.
Yeah, in heaven, on the other side.
On the Montel Williams show, Sylvia told Amanda's mother, Luana Miller, that her daughter was dead and that her body could be found in water. Luana was heartbroken upon hearing the news. She returned to Ohio and began removing missing posters from telephone poles and giving away Amanda's belongings. Amanda Berry's body was never found, and her mother died of heart failure 2 years later, without ever knowing the truth, which would be revealed almost 10 years later.
Leave a 911.
Hello, please. Help me, I'm Amanda Berry.
You need police, fire, or ambulance?
I'm the police.
Okay, and what's going on there?
I've been kidnapped, and I've been missing for 10 years, and I'm here. I'm free now.
In May 2013, police in Cleveland, Ohio, arrested Ariel Castro for the kidnappings of Michelle Knight, Gina Jesus and Amanda Berry. The same Amanda Berry, whose now deceased mother had given up looking for her based on completely fabricated information that she had obtained from Sylvia Brown. Fortunately, Sylvia's failures had not gone unnoticed by this point. After a slew of bad press, Sylvia Brown had to face her critics. She released a statement that read, quote, "For more than 50 years as a spiritual psychic and guide, when called upon either to help authorities with missing persons cases or to help families with questions about their loved ones, I have been more right than wrong. If ever there was a time to be grateful and relieved for being mistaken, this is that time. Only God is right all of the time." Notable skeptic James Randi, the same man that exposed Reverend Peter Popoff, issued a challenge to Sylvia to prove her psychic powers in exchange for $1 million. Sylvia accepted the challenge initially, but eventually stopped returning his calls. She claimed that her track record of finding missing persons was all the proof that she needed. Although, unlike Sylvia's predictions, there was actual data to prove her claim completely incorrect. In reality, there was very little that she had ever done to help law enforcement find any missing persons. In 2010, Skeptical Inquirer magazine published a 3-year study of Sylvia Brown's claim that she had a psychic success rate between 87 to 90%. They compared Sylvia's predictions of 115 different cases to newspaper reports of these same events. After analysing cases where there was a known outcome, about 25 of them in total, the Skeptical Inquirer concluded that, quote, "Brown has not even been mostly correct in a single case." Essentially, the data showed that Sylvia Brown had been wrong in every single one of her analysed predictions. She had a success rate of 0%. This is fairly amusing, given that in multiple-choice testing, random guessing yields an average correct rate proportional to the number of options, e.g. 50% for true or false, 25% for a 4-option test. So in effect, she was actually less psychic than non-psychic people. And remember, that study only covered a period of 3 years, not her full career. Sylvia Brown's career as a psychic had lasted more than 3 decades. A career that featured a 4-year waiting list for a 30-minute telephone session, for which she charged $750. Sylvia also charged police departments $400 for her, quote, "help with missing persons cases." An interesting use of taxpayer money, I guess, not to mention any use in a court trial. Even in the mid to late 2000s, Sylvia's business manager claimed that from all of her different ventures, the psychic was generating over $3 million a year in revenue. Given how many lies and inaccuracies surround her, it's difficult to verify if this is true, though it might actually be the case. People pay for these readings in droves. Even her reclusive first husband, Gary Dufresne, broke his silence after the Sean Hornbrook debacle. In an interview with Robert Lancaster, the creator of StopSylvia.com, Gary said that he could no longer sit back and let his ex-wife get away with what she had been doing. He stated, quote, "I try to get it out of my mind as much as possible, but the damage she does to unsuspecting people in crisis situations is just atrocious." During the same interview, Gary also shared a conversation that he had with Sylvia back in the early 1970s. When she first began holding tarot readings at their home. Gary stated, quote, "I said to her, as we were washing dishes and she was wiping, I said, 'Sylvia, how can you tell people this kind of stuff? You know it's not true, and some of these people actually are probably going to believe it.' And do you know what Sylvia said? She said, 'Screw them. Anybody who believes this stuff ought to be taken.'" In fairness, after listening to multiple Sylvia Brown interviews and television appearances, this does actually sound like her. Curt and abrasive. Sylvia was asked to respond to her ex-husband's comments after the interview was published. She said Gary Dufresne was a liar. She said he was a dark soul entity and followed up with, quote, but at least the asshole gave me children. Two children, to be exact, Paul and Chris. The latter of whom has found his way into the family business, shall we say. In 2003, Sylvia Brown, after publicly stating that she was not psychic about herself, made one final prediction about herself. She told Larry King that she would die in 2024 at the age of 88. She was wrong again. Sylvia Brown died on November 20th, 2013 at the age of 77. I guess she was right about one thing. She was not psychic about herself. After learning of her death, a spokesperson for the James Randi Educational Foundation released a statement. The statement said, quote, "No one celebrates her death, but skeptics do criticize how she lived. Her dismal track record of predictions would only be laughable if they did not hurt so many people. The number of people she hurt with her pretend supernatural abilities was nearly as high as the number of her failed predictions. It is sad that it took death to stop Sylvia Brown." I think that ultimately, this quote was perfectly put. Dead Souls is researched, written, produced, and hosted by me, Jamie Black, with music by Mark Butler and Coag. Dead Souls is not part of any network or corporation and is entirely independent. Therefore, our views are completely free from any bias or censorship. For more information about our show, follow us on Twitter at Dead Souls Cast or Instagram at dead_souls_podcast. If you want to support the show, you can do so by going to patreon.com/deadsouls. For $2 a month, you will get access to exclusive ad-free episodes only for Patreon supporters and exclusive access to written articles, blogs, and research. You may have noticed that sometimes our podcast doesn't appear on your YouTube feed, and very often it gets age-restricted or removed altogether. This isn't by accident. We cover topics that are not always algorithm-friendly, and the big corporations don't love it when we talk about certain topics or have certain conversations, especially the kind that challenge mainstream narratives. This is another reason that we have created a Patreon. It's a space where we can post full, unfiltered and uncensored topics that the big platforms and mainstream media don't always like. Proceeds from our Patreon go directly to supporting us, our show, our research, and keep the lights on here at Dead Souls HQ. Go check it out. patreon.com/deadsouls. That's it. Thanks for listening. Good night, everyone.